Thank you very much for your very impressive presentation. And I would like to ask the next lecturer, Professor Skúli Skúlason from Hólar University College from Iceland. The title of his presentation is Evolution of Culture, the Role of Education and Research for Diversity and Innovation in Icelandic Rural Society. Mr. Rector, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Rector, Dean, Mayor, Professors, and ladies and gentlemen, it's an honor to be invited to be here. And I also want to mention that this is following a very nice visit we had from the Dean and his colleagues here to our place in Iceland about 3 years ago. So we really welcome this relationship, and we want to hope that it will grow even further. So thank you very much for that. And as the title of my presentation implies, I'm going to be talking about knowledge and wisdom in a wide sense, the importance of education for cultural change. But as we all, and I'm going to take an example from rural Iceland. But I think we can generalize what I'm going to say quite a bit. We all appreciate that knowledge and wisdom, science and education is important for all prosperous communities and cultures to develop. And we can examine this at individual, social, community level, and of course also at the industrial level. And so we can say really that this the importance of knowledge ranges from the sort of ethical foundations of our relationships to how we build our infrastructure of our industries. And this relates to the diverse values or the landscape that drive and shape our cultures. And we can really say that knowledge and wisdom guides this process, as it sort of forms the theoretical basis of what I want to present. So this is the way I present the value landscape that societies and cultures have. And here is a very simple division of worldly values, where we have economical, political and social values, then we have mental values or spiritual values, which are less limited than the worldly values, science, art, games, knowledge, those issues. And then all this is based on moral values, which of course is the foundation of all societies. And then these value systems are of course all combined. And we could talk much more about this, but this is sort of the way I like to present my view of the value landscape of a culture, which relates to my sort of argument here today. And we can then say, getting back to the last sentence of the previous slide there, that knowledge and wisdom are motivated by these values. They drive development based on these values, as we've heard examples of already here. And so they guide the cultural evolution which this is a part of. And I use this term there, this advantasig. In Icelandic we say to do things properly is really what culture is all about. So we want to do things properly. And I also want to say that the way education and research should guide the development of values is to harmonize them as well. We have to be careful not to disproportionately put effort to certain values. And now I may be alluding to some disproportional efforts to economy, for example, where it sort of has driven many countries to some very big crisis now. Maybe we should have considered values in a wider sense in our world. And I should maybe say at this time, because I skipped the content slide in the beginning, that I am an evolutionary biologist. So I'm actually using the opportunity to sort of discuss these important issues in relation to evolutionary biology, because cultural evolution is really a field there. So how does this then relate to changes in rural and coastal Iceland, which is sort of the example that I was going to be given? We have seen major demographic changes occurring there, as elsewhere, as has been presented here in the industrial world, in the latter part of the 20th century in particular. And this has been related to issues like urbanization, rising technology at all levels, and rapid economic development and globalization. What we've seen is that traditional sheep farming districts, just to simplify the picture of rural Iceland to you, the way it used to be, and simple fishing villages were basically threatened. And this is a process starting about 1970, maybe 1960 in particular, in the last century. And of course, this is a part of a global story that we've heard parts of here before. And what I want to talk about now in this sort of little bit theoretical framework that I was creating with the values and everything is that what were the reactions to this and what is happening? It's really an example of a living example of a cultural change. First of all, of course, we had governmental aid, but I'm not going to be talking very much about rural development. I'm more going to talk about the local initiatives. What were they in sort of the spirit of sustainability and resilience? But before I go into the example of rural Iceland and the changes and the way education played a role there, I want to dwell a little bit with the theoretical background of the evolutionary change here, and just identify what concepts and forces are really operating. So just to sort of open up the discussion on that. Because we can say that, for example, in rural Iceland, when these threats were, locally driven reactions were based on identifying the surrounding diversity or the opportunities that were originating in the local industries, in the farming activities, in nature, in the landscape, in the opportunities that resources, natural resources provided, and of course in the culture itself, cultural heritage, including of course the diverse community knowledge. So the form of this diversity of course is complex. And then we can say that the process then started to take the form of selecting something, items or groups of items or complexes from this diversity. To create or innovate. So we can say that these two concepts, diversity and selection, are then creating an example of a very rapid cultural evolution, because we've seen in Iceland major changes occurring, especially in the rural and coastal environment, based on these kinds of theoretical concepts. And to dwell a little bit longer with these concepts, just to emphasize why they are useful to understanding these processes, is that, of course, any kind of diversity, like in biology, biological diversity, is the basis of selection or choices. And thus it sort of is the fuel of cultural evolution. And this is expressed in many theories and ideas and agreements on human development, for example, by the United Nations, where it's stated explicitly that human development is about enabling people's choices. So to be able to choose, you have to have something to choose from, diversity. And to dive even a bit deeper, we have to consider that diversity implies to us to sense, use our senses and imagination really to see the diversity. It's more a question of sensing. Whereas selecting from the diversity implies critical thinking. It implies processes of education and understanding to make the best and most informed choices. So I'm making a subtle distinction between those two concepts here that will help us to sort of, I think, analyze these issues further with these evolutionary ideas that I'm presenting. So to relate it again to the value landscape of communities or cultures, then we can even go further and say that diversity provides the freedom for selection or choices, or constraints to it if there is little diversity, depending of course on the circumstances that, for example, a particular nation or a particular area is faced with when it's under threat and that change is needed. And the selection process, which is very much based on the sort of knowledge factor, we can say, is directly related to the value landscape that shapes communities, the values of our industries, the values of our spiritual life, for that matter, and also of our ethical relationships. And we can say that knowledge and wisdom, in the way I presented it here, provide the means for this selection to be successful. And we all know in ideas and discussions on rural and community development, we often use concepts like individual and community identity, happiness, of course, success, and independence, which, of course, are only going to happen if we do this properly. So they are really the outcome of all of this, the adaptive result, what I refer to there in this slide as what we are. That is the conclusion of all of this process. Whether we are successful or not is another matter. So now maybe come back to earth a little bit and give you the example of rural Iceland as in relation to these ideas. And we can say, what diversity did rural Iceland then, or Iceland in general, face during these threats? And I just present you a very simple example of this diversity that has then been used. Of course, there were specific aspects of traditional farming that were opening up opportunities. I mentioned, because I'm going to bring it up more as an example later, the Icelandic horse, which is a breed which is quite popular worldwide, in fact, for its very special talents. So it became a target of selection, in fact. And of course, all sorts of new local products that could be treated differently in agriculture. But of course related to the development of tourism to some extent. Secondly, I mentioned new farming activities that were identified, like forestry, land reclamation. This is a huge issue in Iceland. Aquaculture, the farming of fish or aquatic products. Iceland, of course, is a huge, relatively speaking, fishing nation, but we had very little aquaculture until about 30 years ago. And then, of course, all sorts of environmental aspects related to the land reclamation and land planning and those sorts of issues that became a target of the rural community. And last but not the least, treasures that are related to very diverse and impressive Icelandic landscapes and nature, because of its volcanic nature in particular, Icelandic history, like every country has a history, and cultural heritage and art that it cherishes. That happens in Iceland, of course, as well. And this has supported massive growth of tourism in rural Iceland to the extent that it's becoming now the third most important part of our economy, and only in a very, very few years. And just to give you a lighten up the discussion here a little bit with a picture from very close to our university college in Hólar. This is the landscape we have in front of us when we drive to the town to buy groceries. It's a volcanic island there, and the Iceland is all volcanic. There is hardly any rock there which is not of volcanic origin. But just to emphasize what has happened, we have seen massive and very rapid cultural evolution. You see, I'm using the concept cultural evolution for rural development here, really. So we've seen these changes occurring because of selection for these diverse options. They are, in fact, or were, in fact, very, very diverse. So it's really, like I said in the beginning, a living example of cultural evolution. And I'm sure we could find similar ways to analyze the evolution of culture in Hungary and predict what it's going to be like in the future, I'm sure. And the point here is that education and research, and this is sort of getting back to the title of my presentation, has greatly facilitated this change, especially aiding the selection or innovation part. Whereas we use our senses and imagination maybe more to see the diversity, if you see the distinction. And now I will present you very limited examples or very targeted examples of agricultural education which relates to my school, and also of the development of very diverse and dynamic knowledge centers of many kinds that have sort of mushroomed in Iceland in the last particularly 10, 15 years. And I should maybe emphasize that it's sometimes difficult to discuss and analyze something which you're a part of, because I've been working for this college now for almost 20 years, and it's been it's sometimes difficult to push back a little bit and just watch what has happened and be able to analyze it without getting too involved and make things too complicated. But it's also a very big challenge and a privilege to be a part of a change, as I think we all appreciate. So to explain then the educational part of the agricultural. Of course, there is more agricultural education in Iceland than just at our college, but I will not be talking about that. I'll just take this as an example. And Holar University College was founded in 1882, at the same time as many agricultural colleges in the industrial world later to become were founded. And it, at that time, it really related to a cultural change in Iceland that involved the development of an independent state in Iceland. It occurred after the Second World War. But I should also mention that the place Holar is a very historical location with about 900 something years of history of education and also as church activities. So the college supported traditional agricultural training for decades until this change, this threat that I mentioned was apparent. And that was just in Iceland. So the response of the college was that after 1980 approximately, it changed completely. It faced really the opportunity to just close up or do something different than support. And the decision was to specialize very strongly, and subsequently the college developed at the university level and became a fully accredited university a few years ago. And this is a picture of the place, just to lighten again up the process of this presentation. It's a very mountainous landscape there, and here you see the cathedral, which is sort of the mark of this long history that I told you about. I think at least some people from here have climbed this mountain, and this is about 1,250 meters. You appreciate that I'm not mentioning any demography. Iceland is a very small country with about 330,000 people. And at our college, we have about 55 employees with about 250 full-time students. And it is in a village, really, of a little over 250 people. But the specializations, they were very much focused on these changes, not for a good reason. Equine studies became a major department there, connected with massive developments of that industry. And that has clearly supported the development of this industry, both in terms of its business and its recreational power, we can say, both in Iceland and abroad. I can just mention to you that there are about 70,000 Icelandic horses just in Germany. And about 35% of our students, which are about 70 in that program, are actually foreign from over 12 countries. I don't think there's anybody been there from Hungary yet. The second aspect, which is actually the reason why I originally came there, is aquaculture and fish biology, because I'm really a fish evolutionary biologist. And that, so we basically connected very strongly with the need to develop the aquaculture and fish biology. And since then, we've seen massive growth of this industry with lots of, for example, foreign income and foreign currency. So we can really associate the development of these educational and research processes and prosperity in the industry. And specialization and targeting the issue is really the key. You notice how I'm connecting this now with the selection idea of from diversity. And tourism studies, which is the most rapidly growing industry in Iceland, and it is the most rapidly growing department at our college. We now have about 150 students in tourism at our college in a three-year BA program and a couple of diploma programs. And now we even have a master's program in tourism. So, and as I said, it's become the third largest industry in Iceland, so there are massive needs for education in this area. And if we look at what we could call visible societal impact of our activities, to be a bit selfish and say our activities, is that there has been a very clear link between education and research with the success in these fields in Iceland. And it's in fact very easy to measure it, simply by looking at where our graduates are working today. They are now heading national parks, for example, in nature tourism. These are major competitors for the Icelandic horse running industries with horse tracking, and I can go on like that. And aside from that, as you will appreciate very much for the way you discuss your university system here in Hungary, of course, the educational growth of an educational institution is vital for the local economy of the local communities. For example, in this case, in northwest Iceland, where this has now clearly become an economic force of employment and various social issues. And what more happens is that educational institutions like this, they often connect industry, research and government into this, what is usually referred to as the triple helix. So for example, in the local town close to Holar, we now have a science park, which would not be there if the college had not been in Holar. So we can see a lot of development happening around this school. And now I want to move away from Holar and just emphasize very briefly at the end what has then become another example of how knowledge and wisdom, we can say, has been a focus of the development of over 189 knowledge centers all over rural and coastal Iceland. And they often are based with museums or with tourist activities or other research activities. They host university education and research, often connected with the universities. And of course, they are a major source of human capital for these areas, attracting educated people, offering people to come back home with their education from abroad or whatever, and build something in their hometown or community. And they have become very, very important. And now, following the economic crisis that occurred in Iceland and started in 2008 in a serious way, we've seen the importance and political discussion around both the agricultural schools and these knowledge centers been massively more important. There is networking occurring now among these centers. Just to give you an idea, we have about 60 people with PhD degrees working in those 189 centers all over the country, and 180 with a master's degree. So these people are human capital. And the revenue they bring in terms of foreign grants, for example, is enormous, relatively speaking. These centers have an income of about 5 billion Icelandic kroner. And now you can do the calculations when you get back home. This is quite large for Iceland. So they should not be underestimated. And this is where they're distributed. Here you see a map of Iceland, with the numbers are indicating where these centers are. I should tell you that Holar is actually here. Then we have a university in Akureyri here. And then we have Reykjavik here with about four universities and an agricultural university close to Reykjavik here. So to conclude, we can say that governments, and not just in Iceland but elsewhere, have recognized the importance of education and research for community development. And as I presented, recent changes in rural Iceland can be examined as an example, and I will emphasize that this is of course only an example, of very rapid cultural adaptation, where education and research plays a key role. Just confirming the importance of education, research and knowledge for developing social, sustainable and resilient social units. And I think we all need to be reminded of obvious things every now and then, even in the academic community. And that is simply, why are we doing what we are doing? And of course, the purpose of any scholarly activity is to make the world, communities, cultures a better place for us to live. So with that, I would like to thank you again.